What Really Happened with your host, Mike Rivero. Because World War III is a really bad idea. Here is your host, Michael Rivero.
Ah, welcome, everybody. That caught me quite by surprise. My name's Mark Windows. I'm filling in for Mike Rivero. I do a show on RBN twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 p.m., and it's called Windows on the World. Our website is windowsontheworld.net, and it has all our shows and archives. So if you haven't checked it out, please do. Well, tonight I'm going to be talking to two very interesting people, one of whom you may be acquainted with, the other one maybe not, because I've had them both on my shows before. But before we get into the show, we also do a live stream on Fridays on our YouTube channel and a Sunday show on Spreaker, which is also streamed on the website at 3:30 p.m. Central Time and 9:30 p.m. UK time. And to introduce what we're going to be talking about today, somebody put a very interesting comment under a recent video on YouTube that we put out, which was actually one of our shows. Here's the quote. They said, "We have been effed over good and proper, and most people aren't even aware." Well, what we're going to be talking about tonight is something that looks benign until you come up against it, or until it identifies you as outside the accepted narrative. And then we're talking about something here that is breathtaking in its intolerance. And last week, we did a show, a live stream on YouTube called Revelation versus Fake Revolution. And we're going to carry on that conversation today. And my guests are going to be John Waters from Ireland and Lark in Texas. Now, John Waters also works with another journalist called Gemma O'Doherty. Both of these are well-known journalists and writers in Ireland. Both have a background in mainstream media, and both have actually now taken up the idea that they're going to save Ireland from what is going on. And it's a very gallant exercise that they're engaged in. Gemma O'Doherty runs a website called anticorruptionireland.com. And I'm just going to quote from it before we get into the show today. This is from anticorruptionireland.com. "Ireland is drowning in a sea of corruption. Once the land of saints and scholars, it is now a den of iniquity, synonymous with cover-ups, white-collar criminality, and cronyism. Every day, in every corner of the country, citizens' rights are being abused and their taxes squandered by the corrupt ruling elite. From justice to health, agriculture to environment, migration to media, every sphere of Irish public life has been infested with a culture of dishonesty and sleaze. As a people, we cannot continue to stand by any longer and allow this to happen." Well, John and Gemma recently brought a case against the draconian COVID-19 lockdown laws, which are unconstitutional in Ireland. They are against the Irish constitution, which is a written constitution. Now, the case brought derision from the media in Ireland, a situation which actually would have been unimaginable 15 years ago. But Ireland, like all nations, has been changed. The symptoms of this change are apparent in every public-facing organisation. John and Gemma were not allowed to proceed with the case and have been landed with £50,000 costs. We've covered the case in our recent shows, but the mainstream press failed to pick up on the importance of what it actually meant. So in our last show, Revelation versus Fake Revolution, which you can find on YouTube, we started to explore why this is. Now, the whole subject is misinterpreted and is often seen as a right or left issue, and it is nothing of the sort. The changes that we're going to be talking about today happened in the UK with the announcement of the Big Society in 2010, in the United States with the Obama administration. The new system is called communitarianism, a word which is unknown by most people, which is how it is so insidious and how it envelops everything. Of course, the background to all this is sustainable development. It may not be, of course, if you don't know, but most people have heard the term sustainable development. They've heard about Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, the United Nations, and they will be familiar with the World Health Organization, the World Economic Forum. All of these organizations are drivers of this agenda. Now, the recent riots are a reflection of this new system. The participants in the Black Lives Matter and Antifa events are not protesters. They are, in effect, volunteers. They're responding to a community call-out by global corporate sponsors through the media. This same template works at every level of societal engagement. The rights of the individual are usurped for what is known as the common good. This is not for the good of anyone, but for the control and management of all. Now, having experienced the full force of what they call communitarian law, which kind of encases lots of other law, I'm going to get onto this a bit later in the show with Lark in Texas, because he's going to kind of outline how it affects America. But basically, communitarian law is working inside what most people think is the justice system. It is only those who come up against this sort of unjust and contradictory system, and they are victims of the judgments that are handed down, then they get to know what it's really about. And then they start to ask, why? Now, that which would have been classed as unjust previously is now the norm. In fact, it's not just the new normal, it's been the normal for quite a long time. In the UK, we've seen the disintegration of our system and the encapsulation of this new system of global governance, which has affected everything from local councils to the Royal Courts of Justice in London and the High Courts. So this goes right through society and it affects everyone at every level, global to local. We've all heard that, haven't we? But yes. Basically, having studied the intentions and outcomes of how this was rolled out through things like UN Agenda 21, local plans, and the sort of word salad of sustainability, the picture starts to become clearer and clearer. I've been taking talks around the UK for the last 3 years with a lady called Sandy Adams and Piers Corbyn, and those have been received very well. We've been telling people about this system of governance, especially about the implementation of Agenda 21, the taking away of property rights and the implementation of these new laws, which are part of a global governance system. But yes, we've been taking the talks around the UK and right until the lockdown. But the COVID-19 agenda and the economic reset, the destruction of business, is all in line with the global action plan, which is implemented at a local level. Every useful idiot on the planet has been trained into the new system. From the Dalai Lama to Lady Gaga, they all spout the same word salad of Agenda 2030. And of course, this new word, which most people do not know of, called communitarianism. It was the Dalai Lama that recently stated, of course, there is no way to return to those old ways of living. But the lesson we can learn from the past is to act locally, even while thinking globally. Lady Gaga spouted the same global to local agenda when the global citizen lock-in happened a few weeks ago. So basically, these people have just been given a script, a word salad to read. Even the Prince of Wales recently spoke about this. He said, there is a golden opportunity to seize something good from this crisis. Global crises know no borders and highlight how interdependent we are as one people sharing one planet. Well, has he had a UN brain implant too? Yes, he has. Prince Charles was speaking at the launch of the World Economic Forum's Great Reset last Wednesday, and it's described as humanity's chance to craft a more sustainable and equitable world in the wake of the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic. Prince Charles added, unless we take the necessary action and build in a greener and more inclusive and sustainable way, then we will have more and more pandemics. So, the anti-capitalism agenda, the green agenda, the environment movement, the COVID-19 agenda, and now the Black Lives Matter Floyd agenda all have one thing in common. They are all enablers of global governance, the restriction of rights, the destruction of employment and self-employment, universal credit, surveillance, artificial intelligence, control under a global control grid, which restricts all rights for the common good. So, to bring this in, we have social justice warriors in a system based on social justice. the government grants and restricts or withdraws your rights according to its needs in this system. You and the fruits of your labour belong to the community and can be redistributed as needed. This was one of the core elements of United Nations Agenda 21, the taking away of property rights. But the fake protesters at the moment are needed. They are triggered, organised and harvested. The need for self-determination and the ability to intrinsically know right from wrong is removed. The only good act is virtue signalling, to be seen to be upholding the group consensus by the group. And we've seen a lot of that over the last week. These events are all catalysts for global governance under the new system of which no one speaks. And we're here today to talk about it. So I'm going to introduce my first guest today, John Waters from Ireland. John, are you there?
I'm here, Mark, yeah.
That's great, actually. I can see you on my computer, but we are doing radio. So it's quite disconcerting. So I can see you. It's great. It's like having you in the room. So it'll make the conversation, I think, probably a bit more intimate. But yes, John, for the people out there who may not have come across your work before, and you are a well-renowned and well-known journalist and writer, could you just give us a little bit of your background and what made you kind of aware that something was going drastically wrong with the way the system and the government and the governance of Ireland was actually going?
Well, I kind of stumbled into this over a long period. I kind of stumbled in slow motion into the whole thing. I was a journalist for about, you know, since the early 1980s and worked my way through the system in Ireland and the Irish media, newspapers and broadcasting and all that. And I also wrote some plays back then as well and some books. And but I was best known as a columnist for the Irish Times for 24 years. And I wrote a column every week and also wrote other stuff, features and so on. And I developed certain teams from an early stage. I mean, I come from the west of Ireland, so I was different to the others in the other kind of journalists, which is very much a Dublin metropolitan newspaper. And so I was talking about things like nationalism and, Irish history and, you know, some of the catastrophic aspects of that as well, like the famines of so-called of the 1840s and a lot of teams like that. But then I stumbled in the mid 90s by personal circumstances on a team that was to become probably my most identifying characteristic for two decades, which was in relation to fathers' rights and the fact that fathers, I became a single father in the mid 90s and discovered to my shock that I had no rights whatsoever in that capacity and that nobody seemed to have ever thought of this. Well, that's what I first thought. But in fact, as I went on, I discovered that actually they had thought about it and then had second thoughts that it wasn't a good idea to give out fathers any kind of rights. So I started to fight this. And from there, I kind of expanded off into different areas. And I began to write about feminism and what's now called gender politics and all that kind of stuff. And gradually, I started to kind of awaken to the fact that everything I had assumed to be right, because I'd come to this, I'd been a leftish journalist before that in various magazines, alternative countercultural magazines, music papers, and, in Dublin was a listings magazine, a bit like the London magazine Time Out, and then in a left-wing political current affairs magazine called McGill, which is a very successful magazine in Ireland back in the 70s and 80s. And so I was editor of that for a while. But gradually I started to wake up to these things I think certainly in the last decade, I've become really very aware. I mean, I just made certain steps through certain experiences. And I think one of the initial ones of that was in 2012, when there were three referendums in Ireland in the past decade. And in retrospect, you can see a pattern in these that didn't appear to be there if you looked at them from the other direction. You know, the first one was about children's rights, the second one was about gay marriage, and the third one was about abortion. And they seem to be, in a certain sense, disconnected.
Well, actually, John, it's interesting because all of these our globalist agendas through the United Nations.
Yeah, that's right.
And this is where it's quite interesting, because most people don't get this. They can see things happening at a local level. They can go into a court and think, I had no rights, no one was listening to me. But they don't realise that it actually comes from documents that go back to the 80s, such as Our Common Future. And basically, this is all about removing individual rights in favour of collectivism. So, well, yeah, carry on, John. Yeah,
well, that's interesting, because it's slightly more complicated than that in the Irish context, because I realise now, looking back, that these three referendums were actually not about what appear to be their ostensible functions. They were actually about attacking in series three of the most fundamental articles of the Irish Constitution, essentially taking a sledgehammer to each one of them. The first one about children's rights. Well, I mean, just a short version of it. I mean, essentially, what I worked out immediately when I started to examine this was that it was actually a plan not to give rights to children, but to transfer the rights of parents over their children to the state. So the state would become the parent, in effect, the legal parent of the children. And the parents would become, as it were, caretaker parents of the children. And that has huge implications now. For example, things like transgenderism and the rights of parents to actually interfere to protect their children in relation to changing their genders and so on, which we didn't even think of at those when we were fighting this way back in 2012. It wasn't even on the agenda for us.
But, and it's nobody interesting, else. John, because this really started to appear with Cameron's Big Society around 2010 in the UK.
Yeah.
And that's where the sort of global change agents were sort of implemented at a local level. Social entrepreneurs, people trained, the future leaders. These are the people you'd come up against.
Yeah,
who
I want to talk.
Intolerant.
Yeah. I want to come back to that because it's very interesting. Yeah. I have a little experience there. But then they see the gay marriage thing was. So the first one was Article 42 of the Irish Constitution. There are five articles in the Irish Constitution, 40 to 44, inclusive, which you might call the Irish Bill of Rights. I mean, they're not called that, but they're the personal and fundamental rights. But slightly misleading in the sense that, say, Article 41 then is about the family. And that's a very interesting, that was a very interesting construction. It's been hugely damaged now by all this. But it was really, it's not quite, you see, they weren't individualized rights necessarily. They were personal rights in some degree. But for example, the family rights were like a nexus of rights which related to father, mother, child, that kind of triad. Of individuals who were deemed to have such bonds and relationships, interrelationships together in common, that they were had a kind of a right that was protecting all of that relationship, all those relationships, as opposed to being individualized rights. And what they did with the gay marriage thing was that they actually introduced individualized rights into that, which had the function almost like of a dum-dum bullet, you know, that it went in and then exploded the whole thing from the inside. Because that's what's happened now. That hasn't become visible yet because it hasn't. There's no real case law on it. But as that builds up in family courts over the next couple of decades, it will actually in effect mean that the natural rights of parents have been abolished. The biological connections have been abolished. The complementarity of male and female as parents has been abolished. The meaning of marriage has been abolished and so on and so forth. So a family is basically two men and a dog, if that's what they want to call themselves. And they're entitled to constitutional protection for that, more or less. That's a slight exaggeration, but not that much. Not as much, nothing like as much as you would like it to be an exaggeration. And then the third one was on abortion, where there was a written protection which was introduced into the Constitution in 1983, which did no more than actually co-opt what was already an existing natural right. All these rights are natural rights. All these rights in these five articles are natural, inalienable, or inalienable. And imprescriptible rights, antecedent and superior to all positive law. But what actually happened in the 2018 referendum was that people, the authorities managed to pull a sleight of hand where they actually concealed from the public the fact that these rights, even by taking them out of the Constitution, could not be abolished. And therefore, that nothing could really happen to the actual fundamental rights. But in effect, by taking them out of the Constitution, they allowed themselves to introduce abortion.
Yeah, that's great, John. We'll have more after the break with John Waters and Mark Windows. Do call in. It's 800-313-9443. Going to be talking to Larkin, Texas in a short while. This is Windows on the World filling in for Mike Rivero.
You can be tracked and traced when you're online. With identity theft and cybercrimes on the rise, your passwords, your identity, and even your physical location can be revealed to complete strangers. Would you like to surf the internet anonymously and not have to worry about these threats? Well, now you can by visiting patriotinternet.com. For about $2 per month, patriotinternet.com will conceal your IP address and your physical location, allowing you to browse the web, send emails, and instant message anonymously. Patriotinternet.com will bypass filters, block sites, and keyword blocking. You can also bypass logging by your router and your ISP. With PatriotInternet.com, there is no software to install and uses 128-bit encryption for your protection. When using wireless hotspots, PatriotInternet.com shields your information from identity thieves and is compatible with Windows, Mac, and Linux. Protect your identity and your freedom with anonymous internet access from PatriotInternet.com. Visit PatriotInternet.com today.
As a listener of RBN, you're surely concerned about being informed and being ready for whatever may come. Please consider the following questionnaire as a soul-jarring wake-up call. If you answer no to more than two of these following questions, you probably aren't going to make it through any major disruption in our country. The questions were compiled by people that have been there. Are you really ready? Do you own your own firearm for the primary defense and protection of you and your loved ones? Have you ever been professionally trained to stand against life-threatening behavior? Have you ever practiced enough to fire 500 rounds during a 2 to 4 day time frame, day and night? Can you load, unload, fire, and clear a jam in total darkness? Have all the adults in your household been professionally trained? Are you, life and death, comfortable with your abilities with pistol, revolver, shotgun, and rifle? Are you aware that everything that you do to prepare for an emergency is a waste of time, money, and energy? If you haven't honed your abilities to their highest level to protect and keep what you have, do you have the repair parts that will most likely be needed for each of your firearm, and do you have the ability to install those parts? Could you completely clean every firearm you own? Are you aware that your body won't go where your mind hasn't been? In other words, without proper training, followed by regular practice, you probably will not win a gunfight. Well, how did you measure up? Take the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to start correcting your deficiencies by receiving your Commander Lifetime Membership with Front Sight Firearms Training Facility. A one-time donation to RBN for $500 will give you a Commander Lifetime Membership at Front Sight as a tremendously huge thank-you bonus. See details on RBN's webpage to make it happen. The clock is ticking. You had better be ready before it happens.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down.
Communitarianism. And just before the break, we were talking about the big society. During the break, we actually mentioned it, and you had some recollections of it. Did you actually see any signs of it in Ireland around that time, around 2010?
Not really. I mean, we're following it because, I was following because, you know, right from the early 90s. I think after the fall of the Berlin Wall, you know, and then that whole end of history thing, Fukuyama and all of that, that there was a kind of an attempt to reframe the discussion. Because I think everybody by about 92 or so, 93, had kind of realized that Fukuyama was way off the mark, you know, and that history was not ending. It needed just simply to be reframed ideologically. And so there was all kinds of floundering around looking for new directions. And one of the most interesting that I came across was communitarianism. And it sounded a very benign subject, because it seemed to be about the local, about the community, about, you know, in a sense, subsidiarity, I suppose, which was another buzzword going around very much at that time. And what you actually found was that a lot of Catholic groups in Ireland were very much interested, one or two anyway, slightly left, somewhat lefty kind of, somewhat, you know, well, leftist, shall we say, socialist Catholic, you know. That was kind of, you know, it was a bit woolly and vague, you know. But then, you know, later on, in the mid-90s, when Blair started to emerge and there was all this talk about the third way, there seemed to be something in between the two there, you know. Now, by the end of that, people were pretty sick. By Blair's second term, people were pretty sick listening to all this third way stuff, because it was clearly not going anywhere and it was clearly not even sincere. So then Cameron came about with a kind of, well, Cameron was kind of Blair light, really, you know, he came on with this, and I knew some of the people around him, you know, I mean, who were advising about this. There was a guy called Philip Blond, who had written a book called Red Tory. And there was another theologian called John Milbank. And I used to meet these guys now and again, you know, in Italy and places. And they were quite interesting guys, you know, and there didn't seem to be anything sinister about them. You see, this is the interesting thing, you know, there's a lot of this stuff, Mark, you know, that in a certain context seems benign, or can be actually benign. Maybe that's a naive point of view.
I think that's the idea, John. It's framed with language which is open to interpretation, but it's framed in language which is quite subversive. In other words, sustainable development sounds great. How could you disagree with that?
Yeah.
How can you... I agree with this stuff. This is the interesting way it is framed, and it's an all-encompassing system, but it is an intolerant system. So, in other words, it's not right or left. We now have a new system, because they can't call it communism, because that's not very popular. Mm-hmm. And so you find with a lot of this stuff, even with things like sustainable development, when this was being talked about in the 80s, they were looking for words to even replace that. So by the early 90s, we could call it local Agenda 21 or Agenda 21, Agenda 2030. But yeah, they keep reframing it. All these things can be reframed as livability, you know, walkable cities, smart cities. Of course, they're all part of the same thing. It's about a technocratic agenda to control and mind.
Yeah, but say, for example, at the time,
everybody.
Yeah, I remember at the same time, say, early 90s, I mean, one of the things that came up for me as well, which seemed to be somewhat related to this, was the question of what was then called simply basic income, which has now become universal basic income, which is, you know, and I think that change of name signifies something deeper, because at that time, you know, I was quite a fan of basic income as an idea, that it seemed to eliminate the whole question of, you know, the poor law dimensions of social welfare and you know, the means testing and all that kind of stuff, and the kind of snooping of the state on the person who was working, so that it would be a guaranteed basic income for every citizen, which could be either transferred by way of funds or by tax relief. And it seemed to just get rid of the anomalies where you had all these bureaucracies supervising citizens in various guises. But now you look at the concept of basic income and universal basic income, and you put it in beside something like, you know, that Chinese system of social monitoring they have. And you find that, you know, if you do not adhere to all the protocols and guidelines and regulations in terms of your behavior as a citizen, you find your money's cut off. So like the concept of universal basic income becomes extraordinarily sinister in that context. And so that's, I suppose, as time moves on, these things change, as well as having the capacity, but maybe that capacity for change was inbuilt from the start, is the point.
Yes, that's right. And once you start looking into this, you can sort of get a timeline of where it went in the past. I think we're done with John Waters. I think John's going to stay on with us for another few minutes. then we're going to bring in Larkin, Texas. Yes.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extend your life with Extendovite, a 7-herb combination made from garlic, cayenne, bilberry, hawthorn, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Each herb was chosen for their abilities to help improve irregular heartbeats, chest pain, lower cholesterol, as well as normalize blood pressure and clean and strengthen arteries, plus much, much more. Doctors have taken people off of some or all of their pills just because they believe their patients got better while taking Extendovite. Get the dependability of Extendovite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $500? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsight.com to make it happen. You will hear this offer only on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5.
What Really Happened with your host, Mike Rivero. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. Here is your host, Michael Rivero.
Used to that jingle. Okay. Yes. Well, welcome to Mitch's. So little bits are dropping out. Hope you can hear me okay. I'm talking to John Waters in Ireland. And before we actually get on to bringing in Lark to the conversation, Lark in Texas, can we take a call from Laura?
Hello, Mark.
Is Laura? Oh, hi. Well, Laura,
yeah,
your voice has
dropped. This is
dropped.
Charles from St. Petersburg, Florida. Yeah, I just, I don't want to talk too long, but I don't.
Thanks,
this has to do with what you're talking about. Have you seen James Corbett's the Corbett Report? His latest videos on what's his name, the head of Microsoft, Bill Gates, and four different videos.
Yes, I'm aware of that, Charles. Yeah, I'm aware of Corbett, yeah.
That has to do with this lockdown, too.
Absolutely.
Hello?
Yeah, on my end over here. But that's great, Charles. No, I am aware of James Corbett. He does some really good work. I think we've got Laura. I think we've still got Laura.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Online.
We got Laura.
I can't hear it.
Yeah,
we're
having a bit of a connect. Yes, fire away. Laura, you there?
I'm here. I wanted to address homosexual marriage. Okay?
Okay.
I don't know what the laws are like in your country, but in America, you're not married until you consummate a marriage. And, for instance, if a heterosexual couple can get married, but if they never consummate, they can get an annulment, which means the marriage never happened. So they must consummate. Two same-sex couples cannot consummate a marriage.
That's right, yeah. I'm having a bit of trouble with my connection here, Laura, but I hear you. Yes, this is what we were talking about with John the other day. This affects everything. Thanks for your call. I don't know whether you're still there, but I'm having a bit of a problem with my connection. So, John, are you still there?
I'm here, Mark, yeah.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I'm dropping out a bit here. I think we're having a problem with my side, but...
It's a bit heavy. Yeah, it's a lot of noise coming in.
Okay, yeah, great. Okay, John, do you want to just carry on? What were you saying about the big society?
Well, I was just saying that it seemed to be a very woolly concept and it didn't really go anywhere and it seemed almost to be very gimmicky. And yet now you can see in all of these things that there was kind of thinking coming through into politics that was feeding off something deeper, stuff that wasn't really fully formed or for which the conditions were not yet present, which now appear to be becoming into view almost fully formed, given that the conditions have changed so radically with, for example, the introduction of artificial intelligence and all of the level of communications now with Twitter and Facebook and all of these kind of technologies, which have the capacity to police thinking in ways previously undreamed of. And so we live in a different kind of society that has actually made these ideologies which were lying around and which were really no more than talking points through the 90s and beyond, now are becoming quite dangerous, in fact, extraordinarily dangerous, and are fitting into global agendas, for example, the agendas of the Chinese Communist Party, in ways that really I think the public need to be alerted to. And unfortunately, this is happening again at a time when the media are basically in meltdown. Because they're in meltdown, they become desperate and are essentially selling their souls for any kind of survival whatsoever. And so the result is that societies are now missing the most fundamental element of any democracy, which is much more fundamental than even voting, which is the fourth estate, the presence of a press, a free press, which is prepared to give the society the capacity to have a conversation about things that affect it.
And this has been useful.
So, yes. We're now in the situation where we don't have that. And as a result, some of the most dramatic and radical ideas are feeding intravenously into our systems, into our cultures, at a time when our media are absolutely point blank refusing to see what's going on and refusing to tell people truthfully what is going on or what things mean. And I think this is quite a terrifying situation for societies to be in.
Absolutely, John, because people don't really know what's happened. I mean, when I look at a lot of these so-called local newspapers and newspapers which are actually owned by organisations like Reach PLC, which actually owns the Daily Mirror, they have a regional newspaper which goes into every local area in the country. And you have it in Ireland too, because you were attacked by it recently. And it's called the Live Group. and they basically write propaganda pieces. And if you're outside the accepted narrative of public opinion, you are demonized, as you have been recently, as I was when we were trying to talk out about climate change and that people in North Wales would not have to move out of their area because the world's leading expert in sea levels said he would represent them in court. He was labeled a crazy Swede who thought he had paranormal powers, despite being the one of the world's leading experts in sea levels and also contributing to the United Nations IPCC panel on three different papers, three of their reports, until he found out about the fraud that was going on. Then he resigned. But we were roundly attacked by the Labour Party. They put leaflets through every door of every house in the area that we were going to do our talk. And this is the norm. And these papers, they do it under qualified privilege. And they think they have the right to do it. I mean, this was not the same when you were in journalism, was it, John?
No, it wasn't. No, well, it certainly wasn't the same when I started in journalism and for many years afterwards. I began to see the early signs of this sort of stuff maybe about a decade ago. I mean, I always had problems, actually, once you crossed a certain line. I don't mean in terms of the kind of commentary you would do, but the subjects that you would touch on. I mean, again, when I started to actually question feminism back in the mid-90s, I found that I was really in some serious trouble. And there were serious attempts to get me fired from the Irish Times, which really seemed to me to be extraordinary. But it did happen, and happened repeatedly. But nevertheless, even like there were certain kind of subjects that was true of. Gay issues weren't even on the radar at that point. I'm talking about the mid-90s. Not until about 2011, 2012 did that start to become a factor. But gradually, all of these issues seemed to kind of rise to the top, and journalism seemed to be more about fighting for gay rights and fighting feminist issues, and fighting for abortion, and so forth and so on. And then, more laterally, fighting to defend government policy secretly cultivating mass immigration into Ireland. You know, masses of people were being brought in surreptitiously, without any consultation, and being dumped in little villages all over Ireland, you know, in these direct provision centres. And as soon as you mentioned or raised a question about this, you were dubbed a racist. So the press became like the police force of political correctness, and also the director of public prosecutions of political correct issues, so that if you drew attention to yourself under any of these headings, the press seemed to regard its function as being to put you on trial publicly and humiliate you and destroy you insofar as it could.
That's absolutely correct, John. That's exactly what it is, because it's just one narrow corridor of accepted opinion. And what it's all about is introducing a common enemy. A big thing about communitarianism is that there's a common cause, but equally there's a common enemy. Of course, the common enemy of humanity was man, according to a Club of Rome document and the first global revolution. That's where the actual idea of using climate change as an agenda, as a driving agenda, came from. It actually came out of that Club of Rome paper. And the Club of Rome, along with other think tanks, and of course, the major players like the United Nations, the World Health Organization, World Economic Forum, and all of these papers that came out, starting with Our Common Future, going through the Rio conference, it's really hard for most people to get their heads around all this, because they see a multipolar kind of operation, and it doesn't make sense to them that it's all connected, yet it all is. But in actual fact, the system we're talking about is incredibly simple at the heart of it. It's just that it's all-encompassing. The actual ideology behind of it, and it is very simple, it means that everybody has to become part of the accepted community. And if you're not in the accepted community, then you have no rights. You have no property rights. You have no rights to anything. You have no rights to your own thoughts. That's actually how it works. And once
That's right.
you get on the, yeah, once you get on the receiving end of it, like I know you and Gemma have been, and I've been on the receiving end of it, and I've seen the side of it which goes into domestic terrorism. In other words, people's lives.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is.
You know, there's different levels of this.
Yeah, well, we discovered, I mean, we fought an election there in February in Ireland, you know, and this was quite extraordinary that, you know, we had members of Antifa attacking, trying to break up our meeting, our public meetings, when we tried to speak to people who might be interested in voting for us. And they were in concert with the police. Like, the police were actually taking instructions from Antifa on the ground and carrying out their orders. Like, it was quite shocking. I mean, in what used to be a democratic society. And that this is kind of, you know, this fundamental change, you know, the concept of cultural Marxism is mixed in there strongly. And that is about the weaponization of victimologies. And that's a key element of the strategy, whereby they separate people on issues with regard to, you know, as I said, going back to the referendums in Ireland, children. So suddenly, if you actually questioned the transfer of rights from the state, from parents to the state, you were somehow against children. You were the enemy of children. And similarly, you're the enemy of gay. If you try to protect the family and marriage and these concepts, which are age-old concepts, you were anti-gay, and so on and so forth. And then you are demonized and created as this kind of reactionary. So all debate is impossible, because anybody who dissents from the agenda is a reactionary, and therefore not simply wrong, but morally wrong. And so you become a pariah. And so these people have then license to attack you in public and to break up your meetings in full view of the police. In fact, with the cooperation of the police, and, you know, pelt you with eggs bash up your car, break your car windscreen, and the cops just smirk. You know, like, this is the kind of degeneration that we're seeing in America right at this moment, you know, and in Britain. You know, yesterday, I think in London, as far as I recall, the statue of Winston Churchill was defaced, and that a dozen men, I understand, who were standing there, prepared, citizens, civilians, prepared to guard the statue, knowing that something was going to happen to it, were cleared away by the police to make room for the vandals who were going to deface the statue. Now, that's exactly the kind of thing that we've been experiencing in Ireland.
Yes, well, in Bristol the other day, they pulled down a statue, just like they were doing in America a couple of years ago. But if you go back even to 2016, you can see reports from American police talking about Black Lives Matter and the problems that it was causing. And basically that this was just people who were under instruction, and it's nothing to do with a protest. That's the whole point, that the way this is controlled is psychologically, and it's manipulated. And if you talk about policing and community policing is everywhere. And I've suffered at the hands of the community police, because if you go to them with a crime, say it's Antifa attacked my friend's charity, Antifa attacked the charity. But the thing is that we had no defense against them. The police would not arrest them, just like you're saying, because they told me at the beginning, nobody will be arrested. I said, but there's crime numbers all over the place for these people. They broke into our building. They've stole everything. They ended up taking over the building. They took over the whole charity.
Yeah.
And it was only through sheer persistence that we managed to get the building back, because I knew that they were using the Saul Alinsky rules, which again was announced by Obama. Saul Alinsky rules came from Saul Alinsky, the radical housing campaigner of the early 60s, and his rules for radicals was dedicated to Lucifer. And it's about subversive ways of taking power. It's not about basically getting yourself into a position of power. It's about taking power by any means necessary. And so when people come up against this, they're in such shock. They often are in post-traumatic stress disorder, because they don't know what's happened to them. They just have no idea how they've been attacked, why they've been attacked, or really, in effect, why they're not being protected by the police. And this is the point, that you don't have rights in this new system. All rights are removed. And I've suffered at it with this for quite a few years, but because I had an insight into it, I knew why it was happening. But other people aren't quite as fortunate, because they get attacked by these radical groups and they just have to disappear. I know so many people who've had small businesses and they haven't fitted in with the accepted narrative, and they are hounded until they leave.
Yeah,
because this is not an accepting system, it's a totalitarian system. Yeah, carry on, John.
Yeah, no, it's struck me recently in relation to this lockdown business that actually, I mean, I as I said, I was writing about family law 30 odd years ago, you know, and about the things that happened there behind in secret courts, And really, there was where there was a barbarous attack on the intimate relationships in the family and on the individuals within it and on the children and so on. And now in this lockdown, you can see the same actual, intentions and same intents and the same kind of strategies directed at the entire global population, as it were, that they're actually attacking families and human beings in their very intimate, most intimate realms, in their families, in their interrelationships, in their privacy, in their homes, that their homes are being turned into prison cells and so on and so forth. And it seems to me that this is actually a very interesting extrapolation from the family law experience, which is, kind of a soft law. It's all done on the basis that there's no law, but it's actually direction of the court. And what you're actually finding out, this is very much like that. It's direct. It's not actually law as such, but it appears to be soft. But as you say, it carries with it a deep vat of injustice, because precisely there is no law, only for those who are listed victims or listed beneficiaries.
That's right, John. Thanks a lot. We'll be after the break.
Yes.
See you after the break, yeah.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company? And it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks.
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive. Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store, or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
After about a month of Extendovite, I don't know what it is about the circulation factor. I was able to increase the weight, increase the amount of sets I could do. It has to do with the oxygen getting to the blood. You should market this as an athletic performance. And I don't change anything about my diet or anything. I just thought, what the hell is in this stuff? This is amazing. Bilberry extract has got something called resveratrol in it, which is the same stuff that you get from red wine. It's also good for eyesight. And I was reading that the Royal Air Force during World War II would give their pilots bilberry jam so they could have better night vision stuff. This is amazing.
To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
Welcome back to the Mike Rivero Show. I'm Mark Windows, filling in for Mike Rivero. We've just had a great conversation in the first hour with John Waters from Ireland, and I had a bit of a wobbly connection. So apologies to the callers. I lost them slightly. But we were really talking about the bigger picture that affects everybody. And the system. And that sounds like a massively sweeping statement until you realize how far it goes back to documents like Our Common Future, the Club of Rome, and their reports, Limits to Growth, and the First Global Revolution. I've been studying this stuff for a long time. We're going to bring Lark into the conversation soon, but I think John's got to leave us. So, John, just to wrap up, give us Mark. A little bit of information about what your next move is in getting Ireland back to where it really should be.
Well, we're lodging an appeal now at the Court of Appeal in Dublin, and we have 28 days to do that from the time of the perfection of the judgment or the order. And so we'll have to have it in kind of before the end of June. And then we wait for the appeal to be processed and so on. And we'll take it up the system then as required. If we win, we come back to the High Court and have a judicial review of the whole thing. If not, we go on to the Supreme Court. This is vital because, you know, what we were just talking about there, I mean, you know, when you start to unpick it, you realize that actually, you know, in the family law realm, they essentially abolished all kind of procedures and fundamental elements of the judicial system, such as, you know, the presumption of innocence and due process and all of the things that are on which our civilization or rule of law is built. And essentially what they're trying to do in this, in a certain way, there's a certain way of seeing this, that what they're trying to do is extend these measures now to the entire judicial system, whereby people will be subject to kind of arbitrary law based on, as you said, the common good. You know, if somebody's health can be said to be in danger, if you will be blackmailed in the same way as people were blackmailed about children's rights in Ireland in 2012. You know, if, oh, so you don't want to give rights to children. Oh, why not? You know, you don't like children, you know, and it's the same thing. Oh, you want old people to die, do you? So it's all this kind of blackmail stuff, which essentially suspends or negates the rights of individuals to actually go about their business and be left alone by the state. And this is a very insidious thing. And one of the things we saw in the course of these proceedings so far is how, you know, the absolute cast iron principle that justice must happen in public in order to be justice has been suspended in the Irish courts. And essentially, we were actually in closed courts now in what should have been a civil matter before the public. So they're using all these tricks to suspend all the things we've taken for granted. And that brings me to the, I suppose, fundamental point, that what's going on here is we're dealing with elites or establishments which are really have grown impatient with the idea of democracy and with the idea that people have the right to sit around discussing things and voting on things. And they're tired of this because they want to get on with ruling or controlling. And they want to, you know, dispose of all of these kind of niceties once and for all. And so that's where we are.
That's right, John. Thanks a lot. I know you've got to get off and you've got a stream. We'll see you after the break with Lark in Texas. Thanks a lot, John. I'll speak to you soon.
Speak soon. God bless. Bye.
I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.